Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 18th of April. Mark Doty is our guest this hour. He is the author of a number of books. The one that we're discussing is Dog Years, a memoir. Mark has also written 7 books of poetry, 3 books of nonfiction, and has won all kinds of awards for his writing. He's been a professor, well, he is now, at the University of Houston. He's also traveled all over the country, University of Iowa. He taught there, Columbia University, Sarah Lawrence College. He offers poetry and memoir workshops. This book is just so lovely. He says that he hopes his book really does have some things to say about dogs, but it's also a book about how we continue loving the world, how we agree to go on participating in life even when we know loss is inevitable. All good writing about dogs is probably about something else, because they serve as a kind of mirror for human beings, a vehicle we use to explore our own emotional lives. Dogs help us to know the history of our own hearts. This book spans a decade of Mark's life, and one that was filled with many deaths. His partner, Wally, from AIDS in the mid-90s, an acquaintance on September 11th of 2001, and 2 of his dogs, Bo, a wonderful golden retriever, and Arden, a loving black lab. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Mark during the course of this hour as we talk about loss and love and how to live and dogs and people and all of that. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 217-2050, if you're joining us in the Milwaukee area. Okay, we'd like to hear from you. Hello, Mark. Thanks so much for being with us.
Good morning, Kathleen.
Oh, I really loved your book. It's just there's just so much to it. You know, it's dogs and your thoughts about things and Emily Dickinson and growing up. And it's just you're a lovely writer. I just want to say that at the beginning. You really are.
Thank you. Well, one of the real pleasures for me in writing this book is that, you know, when you go to tell stories about dogs, you start talking about everything else, right? They connect to so many parts of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
So, I could begin with them and focus on the dogs, but I could also branch out in lots of ways, which I, as a writer, enjoy.
Right. Yeah, well, there was so much to it, right? And people say, gee, what a sad story when you outline what you're writing about, that the death of your partner, the death of the dogs. But the book, that's not what the book is. It's how they touch us. It's how we go about living, and it's how dogs make us go on living sometimes as well, right?
Well, absolutely. You know, and certainly it's a book that that contains a great deal of experience of loss.
Yeah.
But, you know, people who live with dogs know that they are always bringing us back into the present. And dogs are the perfect example of creatures who are responsive to the now. They want to walk.
Right,
they want to chase birds. They want to be in this moment. And that's a great lesson to people.
Yeah. I like this simple line, the world may be falling apart. You might be in the darkest, most hopeless mood, but when it's time to go for a walk, it's time to go for a walk.
Sometimes I think that saved my life. You know, just the fact that there was a creature with a schedule, and I might have been, you know, down in the pit of grief, but my dogs didn't know anything about grief. They were ready for the day to begin. And that readiness, you know, helped me get back out there, too.
Yeah. So you brought, let's go to the time. This is so movingly written. When your partner was dying of AIDS, and you went to the shelter, and you got this dog, Bo. And you did it, obviously, to bring something else into the house. What was it? What were you bringing into the house with Bo?
Well, Wally, at that point, was confined to bed by a viral brain infection. And, you know, there was nothing at all to do about it back in those days. This was early in the 90s. And so we had a hospital bed in our living room, and we were just making Wally as comfortable as we could. And even though we had a dog already, Arden, a big retriever mix, Wally wanted a little cuddly creature who was going to sleep with him and lick his face. So I went to the animal shelter with the idea that I might find a dog that would fit the bill. And the dog that I found was the biggest, calmest golden retriever, just as sweet as could be. He walked over to me in his cage, and he put the weight of his head in my hand.
Oh.
And that did it. You know,
yeah,
that
did
kind
it.
Of gesture of trust. Well, I didn't know that he was under sedation at the time. He had been neutered in the animal shelter, as they often do. So he was extra calm. And when I got him home, he was, in fact, a pretty wild creature. He didn't know his name, and he knew no commands, and he thought that any bit of food in the room that he was in belonged to him. He was just a wild thing, which actually, you know, was weirdly enough, it was just fine. Mm-hmm. It was as if, you know, our lives were such a wreck at that moment. Mm-hmm. To hear this crazy, happy creature coming into the household somehow seemed like just what we needed.
Yeah. And how was he with Wally?
Well, you know, it was wonderful. I remember the first thing he did was to steal Wally's lunch. And then shortly thereafter, you know, he climbed up into that hospital bed and curled up and fell asleep. And this was, you know, Wally only lived another month or so. At this point, he really couldn't feed himself anymore. But I remember him one afternoon reaching out very slowly to rest his hand on Bo's flanks. You know, he wanted to stroke that golden fur. Hmm. And I took a picture of that moment because it seemed very precious to me. It seemed like, you know, here's a guy who has every reason in the world to be bitter at life, resentful. And there he is, just working to reach out one more time and touch something he thinks is beautiful. And I thought, I want to remember that attitude towards things.
Yeah. Tell me about your experiences in the shelter. You talk about the terrible depression of dogs in shelters because they really do want to connect. They exist in relation to us.
I think dogs are the most social of creatures. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure even what one dog all by himself or herself is. You know, I think that they understand themselves as part of a group, and that group includes other dogs, and it certainly includes human beings, too. So a dog who is removed from a context and has no social order, really, is a being on the edge of disappearance. Hmm. And you see the dogs in the shelters who are still so willing to connect. Bo was one of those. Hmm. And you see those dogs who are giving up, too. And, mm-hmm. and that's a heartbreaking thing.
Mm-hmm. And you had to, it must have been so hard for you caring for Wally, and then not all that long thereafter you're caring for Bo, who's sick. And you're really having to care for Bo, aren't you?
Sure. Well, he had a wonderful, you know, energetic life that for a while there. They told me in the animal shelter that they weren't sure of his age, but they thought he was probably around 3. But when I got him home and fed him, he doubled in size. So I'm not sure they were right about that.
Yeah.
And he was a creature of just great delight and energy. And where my other dog was a sort of a more studious and reflective fellow, Bo just was practically never still. And so, you know, for me, at that moment, when I'm living in the deepest grief that I've known, to be with an animal who was right here, right now, mm-hmm. knew nothing mm-hmm. about the past, didn't care about the future, mm-hmm. Was such an instructive thing. And it was a few years before Bo developed kidney failure. Who knows why? What environmental causes perhaps might have been part of that. And then I guess mercifully a brain tumor, so that he died very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And in strange ways, his death paralleled Wally's. Bo also died at home of natural causes, which is unusual for a domestic animal in our country. We choose when their lives end. And Bo died very, very peacefully, and we got to be with him through that process. So it mirrored my experience with Wally.
Yeah. And you talk about, you have this wonderful list, and we'll go through all 7 of them by the time we get to the end of the show, but this relationship that dogs have to time, that they travel a faster curve than human beings. And so you write, an animal's life is for us a theater in which we may see the forces of time and mortality played out in a form smaller than our bodies and more swiftly.
I truly believe this. You know, I think about the way that for most children, the experience of death, the first understanding of a limit to our own being, comes through the death of animals. We see the pet turtle or the dead bird on the sidewalk or the dog or cat at home. That's where we begin to understand something about the nature of time. And when we sign on, you know, to live with an animal, we are agreeing generally that we're going to bond and connect with a creature who's not going to be around as long as we are. And that means we're going to watch that life bud and blossom, and then we're going to watch it wane, which is very hard for us, but it's also a way in which I think we come closer to what it is to live.
Yes, I think you're right. I think it's interesting that you've allowed all these animals and allowed yourself to love them as much. When you look at, when you write about the first dog that you had, who ironically, the dog's name was Wally, and he died so quickly, and you were just inconsolable. You were devastated by this.
Well, I remember the dog himself, who was a beautiful little shepherd and collie mix. And my family lived on a farm in East Tennessee, and that when my little dog got sick, he was put out in the chicken coop, and my mother would go out and feed him milk and egg and try to nurse him. He died very, very young. And my parents' version of that story, which I truly don't remember, is that I was just absolutely inconsolable, so much so that they thought I really shouldn't have a dog because I was a little too sensitive, which was later the approach that they would also take to bicycles, that I probably should avoid bike riding, and sad books because I was too reactive. So look at me as an adult.
Right.
My greatest pleasures are dogs, bicycle riding, and sad books. You know?
Oh, that's funny. This idea, too, and heavens knows I've done this with many a dog in my life, but the great sadness, the horrible loss that you experienced, and you've got this dog, and I don't know what it is about them, but they can sense what's going on, and you could spend a whole day, you say, half the day talking to Bo and half the day crying, and, you know, it was all right with Bo.
Absolutely. People, you know, always get a little uncomfortable around extremities of feeling.
Right.
You know, and anybody who's been bereaved knows this, that you sense when people don't want to hear about it anymore, and that the social climate encourages you to get over it or keep a stiff upper lip, hold your head up and go on. And, you know, I think one of the things that we love about living with animals is that they allow us to feel. We can talk to them all day and you know, put our heads on their bellies and cry if we feel like it, that they like it.
Right.
And, you know, they do have that kind of interesting emotional sensitivity, too. I truly saw this in my old retriever, Arden, who was living in New York 9/11, and the kind of anxiety that he felt in the city was so difficult to watch. And it was partly, I think, an expression of my anxiety, and I think it was partly that he could pick up on the tension in the air, not to mention, you know, the terrible sense that we're wafting up from downtown.
What about this, I think this is number two on your list, not that they're necessarily in order of importance, but this absolute, you know, how often do you get this in your life in any aspect? Refusal of judgment. You don't have to dress up for them. They have no sense of human social status. They care nothing about race, economic level, gender, sexual orientation, or any human form of privilege.
Absolutely.
That's a reason to have a dog,
isn't
right?
That the truth.
Yeah.
Isn't that the truth. They don't, you know, you don't have to look right. You don't have to, you know, sound right. There's no particular kind of car you should be driving or brand of cell phone you should use. You know, you are, in the eyes of your dog, you are perfect.
No, you're perfect.
You are the person with whom they want to, you know, to whom they want to fix their attention on. And this is a real gift. And I think this is often why people who feel, you know, for whatever reason, socially uncomfortable, and we all do sometimes, you know, we really find in animal company such a solace.
Yeah, we sure do. We're going to take phone calls for Mark, and we'll take them in a moment. I hope some of you have had a chance to read the book. Actually, a listener recommended this conversation, and I'm so glad she did. Dog Years, a Memoir. Mark Doty is our guest, and our phone number is 800-486-8655. Mark is the author of a number of books of poetry and nonfiction prose and has been receiving all kinds of awards for his work, National Book Critics Circle Award, the Los Angeles Times Book Prize, and the list goes on. This book, Dog Years, spans a decade of his life, and it includes the death of his partner, Wally, from AIDS in the mid-90s, and the deaths of his dogs, who he writes so lovingly about in this book, Bo, a golden retriever, and Arden, a black lab. He also writes about how to live, about death, about love, and he writes about dogs and how they fit into the scheme of our lives and why it is that we need them, those of us who love them and live with them, that what it is they're offering us. The book's about that as well. So we'll take your phone calls, okay? 800-486-8655, 227-2050 in Milwaukee. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow during this time period, Alberto Gonzalez will be before the Senate Judiciary Committee talking about the firing of the U.S. attorneys, and we will be covering that appearance, so we won't be having our regular 9 to 11 show. We will, though, once they break for a lunch break, we will be offering commentary during that time period. All right, we welcome phone calls for Mark. Our number is 800-486-8655, 227-2050 if you're joining us in Milwaukee. And we're talking about his lovely book, Dog Years, a memoir, just been published by HarperCollins. Starting calls with Mike from Black Earth. Hi, Mike.
Hi. This topic is, of course, very near and dear to my heart because I'm a huge dog lover and I have quite a few dogs. I just wanted to relay something that happened to me about 10 years ago. I was living with my wife in Urbana, Illinois, and there was this strip mall on the edge of town that had a pet store. And we were in there one day. Actually, we were in there looking for aquarium fish. And we realized they sold puppies, which we found kind of deplorable. And a lot of the puppies didn't look so good. And the salesperson confided to us that they had a loss rate of like 5 or 10% or something.
Wow.
And I was like, whoa. So I resolved that I thought, okay, they're getting puppies from puppy mills. So I applied for work there to clean the cages in the early morning. And it was really, I was going to try to just get this job and bust this place for where they got these puppies. Anyway, inevitably, what ended up happening, though, is that I got there at like 5 a.m., and they had all these rules as to how they were going to handle the puppies, and I broke every one of them. First thing I did in the early morning, before, because nobody was in the mall, I let all the puppies out of the cages.
Great.
And they played like crazy. And they had normal poops, and then they ate, and they played some more. Anyway, by the time the store opened at 9:30, they were all, like, nestled in their cages, crashed. And then they'd wake up, and they'd be in really good moods, and they started selling these puppies like crazy. And we didn't lose a single puppy for, like, 8 months because all of a sudden the puppies got what they needed. The upshot of this was I ended up with, like, 4 of these crazy puppies because they would come into the store sometimes in very freaked out, miserable condition, and the manager would say, "Well, this one's never going to sell. We're going to have to do something with this one." And then I'd end up taking it home, you know. And eventually, I did manage to get the store busted for buying puppies from puppy mills. But what sparked my call was when you were talking about dogs in the shelter just need socialization. That is so true. I have been around dogs all my life, and you know, a miserable dog just needs one thing: attention, love, contact with anything alive. Even a cat is better than nothing with some of these.
Sure.
And it's so true with puppies. They thrive immediately once they realize, hey, I'm part of something.
Yeah. What a story this one is, huh, Mark? Whoa.
It's true. And clearly, I can tell that you are a true compassionate animal person because, you know, the kind of person who says, nobody else is going to take this dog. This puppy's not going to make it. Okay, that one's for me. You know, I recognize that kind of character.
Yeah. And even going so far as to work in the store, for heaven's sake, to get there.
Great.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I think the saddest dogs in the shelters are the ones who have lost their names, because sometimes dogs are either found on the street or they're simply given up by owners without information. And a dog who doesn't have that bit of a word to connect that animal to the human community seems to really be in trouble.
Thank you, Mike, so much for your call. Let's go to Jesse from Green Bay next. Hi, Jesse.
Hi. I just wanted to thank you for having the show on the air today, and thank you, Mark, for being a part of that.
Well, my pleasure. Thanks for calling.
You're welcome. And I just wanted to say that, you know, my dog has absolutely changed my whole family's lives. You know, I've always wanted a dog. I've been an animal lover my whole life, and I was always told, no, you won't walk the dog. You won't pick up his, you know, leftovers or anything like that. So I was never able to get one. And then about almost 5 years ago in August, my brother committed suicide.
Oh.
Yes. And after that, my parents surprised my sister and I by bringing us to a house that ended up having a breed of Springer Spaniels.
Oh.
And we ended up picking out my dog, Jed, and it was just, you know, the most loving thing that I've ever had happen is, you know, there was a bunch, there was like 8 dogs to choose from, and I sat down and I had my dog, well, my dog came to me and I put him way over on the other end of the room, and out of my whole family, he came back to me. And so I decided that that would be the perfect dog for us. And over the years, I can tell you he's now our hunting dog. My family could not live, I don't think, without him. And it really kind of filled the void that, you know, we, you know, had after my brother had passed away. And to this day, we still have Jed now. He's almost 4 years old now. And he smiles every time you come home from work. And, you know, he's really one of the only dogs I've ever seen that actually smiles. And he talks. He talks. Whenever he gives you kisses, he calls you Mama. And it's really odd, but, I mean, he just kisses you and he goes, Mama, Mama. And, I mean, it's just the thing that, you know, you really need after a bad day at work or, like you said, you know, with Wally. I mean, it's just, you know, something miraculous that this one dog, you know, could just change a family.
I'm so glad you called. Something miraculous. Dogs can be something miraculous at times, can't they, Mark?
I think, indeed. And one of the ways that happens is that they return us to the life of feeling. You know, we get so busy doing the things that we need to do to make a life, and it is very human to look for ways to avoid feeling. But dogs are a way that I don't understand that. It's a mysterious thing, but the presence of animal company, I think, brings us back to our own emotional lives. And so this makes perfect sense to me that with a wound in the family, you bring in these creatures and people can come together around their regard and interest and affection for those animals who are so eager to receive it and to give it back. So what a wise thing your parents did.
Right. Yeah, that's for sure. It's interesting because you talk about number three of our delight in dogs is the silence of the species. But you say anyone who loves a dog has had the experience of being looked at by a creature who seems to be on the verge of speech or who seems to wish to speak. I think that's true.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I lived with Arden for 16 years, and to the last day of his life, I thought he was looking at me, and maybe this will be the day that he finally speaks that word that he's been working on all this time. You know, their faces are so intent upon looking into ours and often so brimming with awareness of us. So we want to translate that into speech because, you know, salient characteristic of our species is that we live in language, and we think in words, we use words to connect with one another. Once we learn language, we can never really depart from it. Our experiences are always turning themselves into words. It's not true for dogs. So I think that we feel so intensely their wordlessness, and that, you know, reminds us of something that we ourselves have lost.
You know, I can understand, and I've had friends say this, being so attached. I had one dog in my life. God, I love that dog. That Karina, she was a one. God, I loved it. She was just a wonderful dog. You know, and I've been through some hard times, and she was my buddy. I mean, we talked to each other. We spent an incredible amount of time together. And when she died, I was inconsolable, as you were when you were a young boy. And I can understand almost people saying that the loss, and then you get criticized, too, because people would say, snap out of it, when a week later I was still inconsolable, not crying all the time, but I was depressed.
Dog, get another one.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I don't think anybody could have, because it was mostly just me and the dog. She didn't have a lot of other company. It was the two of us. We were really good friends. And I can almost understand people saying, I can't go through that kind of loss again. But then you do, because life's filled with loss, right?
Absolutely. You know, I mean, one choice that we could make is to stop connecting with animals, right, or with other people because we feel we can't endure loss. But, you know, what kind of life is that? That's not going to provide us with very much satisfaction. I personally am the kind of dog person who needs some time in between. I have needed to go through a period of being between dogs before I was ready again.
Mm-hmm.
But I also know people who just you know, keep adding a young dog to their pack all the time, and I think that's sort of heroic. They say, okay, the loss is going to be part of it, but I'm going to go right ahead anyway.
Yeah. Thanks, Jesse, so much for your call. We have lines open if you'd like to join us. Our number is 800-486-8655, 227-2050 if you're in Milwaukee. Larry from Kingston is next. Hi, Larry.
Hi. I have a half lab, half shepherd, and the vet says he has a little Newfoundland in him.
Uh-huh.
He's black, over 100 pounds.
Ooh.
And, wow.
And he stays outside in the winter. He loves it. I had him for about 6 years. I think it was about the second or third year I had him. I would take water out to him when it was real cold out, and he'd knock it over. And this went on and on. Finally, I got fed up when he knocked the water over right away after I gave him water. And I smacked him upside his head, which I'm ashamed of. But I did it. And when I walked away, I slipped and fell. And that dog's nose was underneath my armpit as fast as you could.
Oh, geez.
To lift me up. And I cried after that.
Mm.
That I was mean to him, and he had so much love for me, and it taught me a real big lesson in life.
Right. They don't hold grudges.
Hmm.
No, they don't. They're so loyal.
Mm-hmm.
And this is actually, I think, part of the gift of living in the present, because in each moment, they are ready to be there for you again. And just because, you know, a couple of minutes ago you had a bad moment, that doesn't mean the next moment's going to be like that.
Yeah, right. And you include some of these stories in the book, too, of people maybe have been bad to dogs and then they're rescued, and the heroic things that dogs – I love those stories.
Oh,
heroic things dogs do for people. You know, I clip them out of the newspaper.
In Provincetown, Massachusetts, which is a community where I've spent lots of time, there's a wonderful statue in the town cemetery of a dog who apparently was so heartbroken upon the death of his human companion that he would go every day.
Jeez.
And lie beside the grave in the cemetery until he passed away himself, and people thought that the fixity of his gaze should be preserved forever. So now that dog is represented in stone right there beside that grave. And I know that's a kind of sentimental Victorian story, but, you know, it sure works for me.
Yeah, it works for me, and your story works for me, Larry. You brought tears to my eyes with that one. Thank you for your call.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.
Our number is 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 227-2050.
Story is you know, a lovely example of a human being instructed in humanness, you know, being instructed in kindness,
yeah,
by animal presence.
Yeah, how true. Let's talk about that gaze, that dog gaze, those dog eyes.
Yeah, aren't they compelling?
And,
you know, in this portion of the book, when I'm writing about the reasons that we love dogs, I had to admit that I think love is something that is always escaping words. How can you say what it is about a person, a landscape, a dog, that enters into your heart and changes it. That's always a little mysterious. And but there are aspects of it, you know, that you can get close to, and that's what I've tried to do. But when I think about the look in a dog's eyes, it seems to me that we're just shading right outside of where language can go here. What is it about that open, direct look that has such compelling power? I think it's partly that there is very little self-consciousness in it. You know, human beings, by nature, we watch ourselves. And we watch ourselves all the time, and we're aware that other people are watching us. But I don't think that dogs are self-conscious. I think they are right there in the moment of attention in a very pure way. And that kind of purity is something that transmits itself through the eyes.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to Marianne from Waukesha. Hi, Marianne.
Good morning. I just wanted to say that I've been a volunteer dog walker at my local animal shelter for over 6 years. And it is the most important thing I do all week. And I want to encourage people to go there and become volunteer dog walkers or volunteer cat socializers or bunny socializers. If you could do it as a family thing. And it's a great thing for people to do who can't have animals also, but love them.
Tell us what you love about it.
It's hard work. I go there 4 hours, 4 to 5 hours on Saturday morning, and I get a wonderful workout, and the animals get walked, and they are so appreciative, and it gets them out of these cages because they're stuck in there 7 by 24. And it's such a wonderful feeling, and we're walking along, and I'm talking to them and telling them, you know, isn't this wonderful? I'm so glad to meet you, and my name's Marianne. What's yours? And we talk, and they wag their tails, and I pet them, and we'll sit down in the grass, and it's just wonderful.
Yeah.
Great. You know, one thing that I love about living with dogs is that you actually have to get up, get out of bed, and get out of the house.
That's right.
And you know,
that's
left
right.
to my own devices, if it's raining or it's sleeting or it's dark, right. You know, I'm going to stay in bed, or I'm going to sit around and drink coffee. And once every time, even if I think, I don't want to go out in this, I get out there, and I am so happy to be in the world awake and looking and noticing things with them. So I feel like the dogs return me to more awareness.
Yeah, they sure do. Thanks so much for the call. Let's go next to Laurel from Stevens Point. Hi, Laurel.
Hi there.
Hi.
I have a quote that really summarizes everything that you've talked about so far, and it's a quote from George Carlin. So there's a couple swear words in here, but it's appropriate. I love my dog. I love all my dogs. Every dog I've ever had, I still love them. And in my life, believe me, I've had me a bunch of damn dogs. Because you keep getting a new one, don't you? It's true. As life goes on, you keep getting one new dog after another. That's the whole secret of life. Life is a series of dogs.
That's great.
It's great. Oh, that's great. Thanks very much for...
What can we say after that?
Yeah, exactly.
Life is a series of connections with people and animals who will disappear, as we will disappear ourselves. And there's something about the fragility and the passing of those connections that makes them all the more valuable.
Yeah, how true. So you're between dogs now?
I am.
Yeah.
Partly it's because Arden and Bo were such big presences in my life, and I needed to let some time pass to be emotionally ready.
And you had to write about him, too.
And I had to write about him. My joke lately is that I have a book instead of a dog, and my book needs to be walked, and I need to take it out in the world and take care of it. But, you know, I really am just now aware of this shift in myself that every dog I see is seeming really magnetic.
I know the feeling.
I'm ready.
A fever almost, don't you? I get like a dog fever at times.
You know, I went back to visit my old house on Cape Cod, which has since been sold, and the guys who bought it have done a beautiful job fixing it up, and the happiest thing for me was that they had a Newfoundland. So in the old house where Arden used to live is another big, black, gentle dog, and I was just... I was infatuated.
Yeah, you're getting close, Mark.
I am, and I, you know, it's difficult when you have a lot of travel in your life or many commitments, but the fact is, when is it ever a convenient time to fall in love, right?
Michelle is next from Black River Falls. Hi, Michelle.
Hi. I just wanted to comment basically on how people don't give dogs enough credit on how smart they are and how they understand more than we realize. We have a rat terrier, and I can talk to him, and I just know he understands a lot of what I say. And, like, for example, one day I was walking out to the mailbox, and I said, okay, Scout, go get us a mole. And when I came back, I'm not kidding you, there was a mole in the exact same spot where I had asked him to go get one.
Wow.
So, but, yeah, and that gaze, if he wants something from me, he'll just sit there and stare at me until I get up and feed him or do whatever he wants from me. So, but he's very, very much a character. So, but, yeah, they're very smart.
I think, you know, one of the pleasures for dog owners is this work of figuring them out. You know, since they can't tell us about themselves, mm-hmm. we love watching them and learning about their point of view, figuring out their vocabularies, which absolutely do indeed exist, being their translator in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks very much for the call. You know, and I do think, though, she talked about they're very smart. I certainly have had a lot of dogs that weren't very smart. They seem to have a big range of intelligence levels.
Sure. Sure. And, you know, they're smart and they're smart. I mean, what's smart to you may not be what is smart to certain breeds or individual dogs who have other things on their minds.
Right. Right.
We get to, you know, that's another part of that work of interpretation, isn't it? That we learn about human awareness or human consciousness by holding it next to other kinds of awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And so to feel, you know, what's the difference between the way my Boston Terrier sees the world and I see the world? What's
right.
the difference between how we think and can I understand
right.
what's going on in that cute little head?
Yeah.
I think it's an endlessly fascinating project.
Yeah. You write, too, just as you can see when you're a very young human being, you can see certain kinds of personality traits. You really do see this in animals fairly young, too, don't you? In dogs.
Oh, sure. You know, I didn't know this until I spent a number of years early in my life working as a preschool teacher, and I was, you know, teaching, you know, 2 and 3-year-olds who were such distinct and definite people. I had no idea that people came with such fully not formed characters, but nascent characters, you know, characteristics that were ready to open and flower, you know, into their full nature. And I completely think that's true about dogs, too. Arden and Beau could not have been more different in their temperaments. And, you know, therefore, I know I didn't create those temperaments, although sometimes I would see those personalities as aspects of myself, too.
Mm-hmm.
That
sure.
these were different parts of me, or perhaps it's more accurate to say that I could see myself reflected in both of them.
Yeah.
And dogs do. They serve as our mirrors, don't they? We learn a great deal about who we are and how we feel by, you know, watching ourselves mirrored back.
More phone calls in a moment. We're talking this hour with Mark Doty, whose latest book, and a lovely one it is, Dog Years, a Memoir. And we, whoa, our lines are just filled. Everybody wants to talk about dogs. This is a great hour. If eventually there will be some openings, and here's how you reach us, 800-486-8655. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Mark Doty, our guest. His book is Dog Years, a Memoir. And we go to Linda next from Oshkosh. Hi, Linda.
Hi, good morning. This is an absolutely wonderful conversation. I just wanted to share some experiences about one particular dog I have. Growing up, we weren't allowed to have dogs. So the first thing I did was get a dog as soon as I had my own place. And I always had big dogs. And 16 years ago, I was working as a visiting nurse, and I had a patient who was wheelchair-bound, and his family bought him a dachshund for his birthday. And caring for her was challenging to him, so I had taken Josie, was her name, home a couple of times and housebroke her for him and brought her back. And one Sunday, he called me and said, if you want this blankety blank blank dog, come and get her because she's torn up all my furniture and I just can't deal with her anymore. And I said, don't touch her. I'll come and get her. And I went and got her, and she has been such a wonderful, wonderful companion to both my husband and myself. through some hard times and through joyous times. And we've just grown to love her so much. Recently, we bought a new set of living room furniture, and we're going through the store looking at the furniture and deciding on the height, making sure it's tall enough so she can look out the window and be able to see everything going on.
Oh, I love
it. She's comfortable.
I love it.
I told him, I said, oh, my gosh, we've turned into those people that run their lives by their dogs, and I'm happy to do it. And we just got her some little stairs to go up and down the sofa, and she's a little arthritic. And my last comment is that I always have thought it's so wonderful to me that dog spelled backward is God, just like they do give you unconditional love, just like God.
Yeah.
So, thank you so
thanks,
much.
Thanks, Linda. Thanks very much for the call.
You can tell those two dog people who are, in fact, willing to rearrange their entire lives around the means of the
animal. I know.
Me too. You know, you buy the right kind of car so there's room for them. You do whatever is necessary.
Yeah, it's true. And it's great to have a show where you can just admit all of it and feel okay about it.
I know. I like this.
Yeah,
I think people so often feel they have to just be a little careful about admitting just how much they think about their animals and just how deeply attached to them they are.
Right. So let's talk a little bit, though, about relationships with human beings. You go through great sadness. You've cared for Wally for a long time, and it was not an easy death for Wally or for you. What about when you're out in the world again? You've got dogs still. I mean, did you run the risk of love me, love my dog? It had to be part of the relationship.
You bet.
Yeah. Of course.
I mean, here I am, a person recently bereaved and still full of turmoil and feeling about that, and I also happen to sleep with 270-pound retrievers. this does not exactly make me hot boyfriend material.
Mark,
so I was very, very lucky to get close to my current partner Paul, who turned out to be infinitely tolerant, but it was a little dicey there, the rearrangement of the pack.
Right.
Arden, who saw himself as the if not the alpha dog, at least certainly second to me, was not really excited about further additions to the family.
Mm-hmm.
And he demonstrated this by claiming the passenger seat in the car.
Ah.
The idea was that when I drove, Arden would sit in the passenger seat, Bo would get in the back.
Right.
Well, the first time that Paul tried to get in the passenger seat, there was a scene. and this was repeated over the course of really months, actually. It wasn't a bad, the scene was a little growling, a little resentment. Arden wasn't quite sure he was going to put up with this, but he certainly came around. I mean, this is another of the admirable qualities of dogs, is the kind of adaptability.
Mm-hmm.
It may be, a little bit of work to figure out how to rearrange the pack and make a new life, but, we'll figure it out.
Yeah. Let's go to Leslie from Merrimack. Hi, Leslie.
Hi, I'm wondering if you can make some comments on this. My mother lives in assisted living, and I'm not sure the word to use. I'm trying to find her again, as she's changing a great deal. And there are things that I think I'm doing that are helpful for her, but they don't seem to be able to resurrect somehow the child of the deeply human part that I remember about my mother, the softness. I'm wondering about asking the assisted living place if they would have a resident dog. And if there is a certain kind of dog that you might recommend, or if there is training that such a dog you think should have.
Yes, there are organizations which sponsor visiting dogs. They're often referred to as therapy dogs. And many people with particularly gentle and sociable animals have volunteered to allow their dogs to be therapy dogs. And that means they're going to nursing homes, hospitals, all kinds of situations where there would not normally be animal company. And so often the results of those visits are that people open up, that they relax in the presence of animals, that they find a sense of pleasure. and cheerfulness there. We know from studies of that animal company frequently lowers blood pressure and stress levels. It just brings people into another kind of state of relaxation. So that, it sounds like a marvelous option, and that might be the place to begin, to look around at your community and see if you can find an organization which sponsors therapy dogs and visits, and so maybe some visiting and see how your mother reacts to that. I think that's a wonderfully compassionate gesture on your part.
I do, too. Thank you, Leslie.
Pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for the call. Let's go next to Peter from Oconomowoc. Hi, Peter. Peter, are you there? Yeah, Peter's not there, so let's go to Bonnie from Madison. Hi, Bonnie.
Oh, hi, Kathleen. Well, I have a couple dogs and four cats. I just wanted to quickly comment on a couple of other things, comments that have been made. We had a neighbor once who had His wife would always ride in the back seat and their dog in the front. I would imagine that's the same issue as your guest dog.
Yes.
I was also very taken with the story of the dog that was outside. And I think people really should keep their dogs inside if they can, because they're such social animals, and it's really, you know, they're emotionally deprived if they're kept outside in a pen all the time. But if people want to help dogs in shelters, you know, like millions of dogs every year, healthy dogs are put down in shelters, people can do that by just getting on the Internet and joining one of these rescue groups. I'm on that, and whenever, you know, the shelter is full, they're going to put down their dogs. You know, you get on and you network with other people. And some of the shelters have been able to reduce their euthanasia rate from 90% to 30%.
Hmm.
And I drive dogs, too, from high-kill shelters to rescues. I'm on one of these dog rescue railroad things. So every once in a while you get a call, you know, two dogs are coming, you know, from this high-kill shelter. Can you take them, you know, like 100 miles away where they'll be picked up by somebody else? And there's a whole network across the country. You know, the last two dogs I drove came from Georgia.
Oh, my
gosh. They wound up in Fargo, North Dakota.
Wow. Good.
So if people, you know, there are a lot of these rescue groups on Yahoo. So if people just are, you know, just want to stay in the comfort of their home or they can't get out to volunteer in a shelter, they could get on one of these networking groups. And, you know, just by alerting other people that, you know, there's going to be a big, you know, euthanasia at a certain shelter, you know, they can help save these dogs. And I've seen it happen.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your call. Thanks, Bonnie. Ann is next from Madison. Hi, Ann.
Hi, Kathleen. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, I'm so nervous. I have never called into public radio before, but I listen every day. And Kathleen, I have to tell you that you're my hero. I listen to your program every day.
Thank you, Ann.
And I pledge your program during every single pledge drive.
Oh, thank you, Ann.
So it's thrilling to talk to you. And Mark, I have to tell you that I'm in a book club, and the next time I get to pick a book, I'm picking your book for my book club to read.
Yeah, it'd be great.
Because I think it sounds wonderful. Okay, so here's my story. I have an almost 11-year-old golden retriever. Her name is Hopper, and she will be 11 in May, and she is the most wonderful dog. And I have so enjoyed listening to the program today, because right now as we speak, I'm working on scrapbooks of Hopper's life to give to my sons for their birthdays. I have a 10-year-old son who's in fourth grade and a 6-year-old son who's in kindergarten, Evan and Elliot, and their birthdays are in April and May. So they'll be each getting a scrapbook of Hopper's life, which includes them when they were born, because Hopper was actually our first child. Not born from us, but so they'll be each getting a scrapbook of Hopper's life, and they'll be getting that as a special birthday gift from their mommy that they'll be able to keep up in their room. And I know that they'll look at their scrapbooks every night, and I just am so excited and to give them to these, and I know that it'll be so wonderful. And, you know, Hopper's 11 now, and she's a big breed dog, and we just talk all the time, my husband and I, about how much longer will she be around, and we just feel like every day now we're so lucky to have her, and we just need to celebrate her life, and so this is one way for me to help the boys just think about how lucky right. we are to have her.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about a scrapbook for your dog. That's a really it's a nice idea, Mark.
It is a nice idea. Yeah. I love the way that you are including your children in thinking about this experience of going through a dog's life and traveling toward its conclusion.
Mm-hmm,
It's so easy for us to avoid thinking about that or, wish that it weren't the case. But to really look at that in a direct way with them by shaping this book of memories seems like a very generous thing for you to do and something that I think will bring your family closer and certainly help them with that process of dealing with loss.
Yeah. Thanks so much for the call. Mark, thank you so much for being with us. I really loved your book. I hope it's doing well and a lot of people will read it. It's you can be sentimental about dog books, but this is a book that's more than dogs. It's just, it's a book about love and dying and dogs and you write it so well. I just think it's great. It's a lovely book.
Well, thank you, Kathleen. I am honored, and this has been so much fun. As you can see, dogs trigger good conversations.
Yes. Yes, they do. Thanks so much. Mark Doty, our guest, and the book is Dog Years, a Memoir. It has just been published by HarperCollins. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the program and to Rhonda for on-air production as well. Copies of the show, call the radio store. The number is 800-747-7444. The program number of this hour is 418E, 418E. News is coming up from National Public Radio, and we'll be with you tomorrow to analyze what's been said by the U.S. Attorney General before the Senate Judiciary Committee. That will be preempting our show, but we'll fill you in during the lunch break. This is The Ideas Net.